1965. That is the year Britton Norman flew the very first Islander off a runway on the Isle of Wight. 60 years is a long time, long enough that most of the people who built that first airplane have long since hung up their tools. And yet here we are in 2025 and a brand new Islander has just rolled out of a hangar in England, assembled in the United Kingdom. The first one built on British soil in nearly six decades. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tower and you're listening to ATIS. Today we talk about a small twin with a very long shadow and what it means that the country that invented it is building it again. Here's what you need to know. But first, a word about who's keeping the lights on today. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Now, let's talk about the Islander. If you've never flown one or never stood next to one, let me paint you a picture. The Britton Norman Islander is a high-wing, twin-piston, unpressurized utility airplane. It is not fast, it is not pretty in the way a Beechcraft is pretty. It is a boxy, honest, hard-working machine with a squared-off fuselage and a big sliding door. And it was designed from the very beginning to do one job well. Carry people and cargo into short, rough, remote strips and bring them home again. The specific airplane that just rolled out is a BN2B26. That's the 26-seat freight and passenger variant of the Piston Islander line. And it is bound for one of the most demanding operating environments on the planet. It's going to the Falkland Islands Government Air Service. That's a mouthful. So let me shorten it the way they do down there. FIGAS, the Falkland Islands Government Air Service, or FIGAS. If you want to understand why this airplane matters, you have to understand FIGAS. So let me set the scene. The Falkland Islands sit in the South Atlantic, off the southern tip of South America. Windswept, remote. A scattering of settlements spread across two big islands and a lot of smaller ones. There are very few paved roads out to the outlying settlements. If you live on a distant farm out there and you need to get to the capital at Stanley, you don't drive. You fly. FIGAS is the air service that makes that possible. They operate islanders into grass strips, into gravel, into fields with a windsock and not much else. The wind down there is relentless. The weather changes in minutes. And the airplane that has carried that load reliably for decades is the Islander. So when FIGAS orders a new one, that is not a novelty purchase. That is a lifeline being renewed. The headline doesn't tell the whole story. The story isn't just that a British factory built an airplane. The story is that a 60-year-old design is still the right answer for one of the hardest short-field, high-wind, remote operations missions in commercial aviation. Nobody has built a better mousetrap for that specific job. Not really. And that tells you something important about airplane design that I want to come back to. But first, the where and the how, because that part has a twist. For most of the Islander's production history, the airplanes were not fully built in Britain. Britton Norman, for a long stretch, had its airframes assembled in Romania at a facility in Bucharest, and then flown to the UK for fit-out, final assembly, and delivery. That arrangement kept the line alive through some very lean years for the company. The Isle of Wight remained the heart of the operation, the design authority, the finishing house. But the metal bending, the primary assembly, that happened on the continent. What's different now is that this airframe was assembled in the United Kingdom, at Britton Norman's facility. That's why you're seeing the phrase first UK-built Islander in nearly 60 years. It's a statement about bringing primary manufacturing back home, reshoring, if you want the industry term for it. Now, according to AveWeb's reporting on this rollout, the airplane isn't heading straight to the South Atlantic. First, it goes through a program of ground testing. And I want to spend a minute on that because it's the part a lot of people skim past, and it's the part that actually matters for safety. When an airplane rolls out of assembly, it is not ready to fly. Not even close. A rollout is a photo op. What comes next is the unglamorous work. Ground testing means exactly what it sounds like. You run the systems while the airplane stays firmly on the ground. You power up the electrical bus and confirm every circuit does what the drawings say it should. You run the engines and check the fuel system for leaks. Check the oil temperatures and pressures. Confirm the propeller governors behave. You cycle the flight controls and verify that when the yoke goes left, the correct surfaces move the correct way. Because you would be surprised how a fresh assembly can hide a rigging error. You test the brakes. You test the landing gear under load. You look for chafing, for loose fittings, for anything that vibration and time will turn into a problem. Only after the airplane passes all of that does it earn a first flight. And only after flight testing does it get signed off for delivery. This affects you if you've ever wondered why there's such a long gap between an airplane rolling out and an airplane entering service. That gap is where the safety lives. It's the difference between a machine that looks finished and a machine that is actually airworthy. Every manufacturer does it, from the smallest kit builder to Boeing, and the ones who cut corners on it are the ones who make the wrong kind of headlines. So this Islander will sit on the ramp in England, running, testing, being poked and probed, before anyone straps in to take it south. Let me widen the lens a little, because there's an industry story here that's bigger than one airplane. Britain Norman has had a hard couple of decades. The general aviation twin-piston market is not a growth business. The design is old. The company has changed hands and restructured more than once. There were real questions, not long ago, about whether the Islander line had a future at all. And yet, here's a new airframe. Built in Britain, with a confirmed customer, that is a sign of life. It's a sign that there's still demand for a purpose-built short-field workhorse that nothing else on the market quite replaces. Because think about the alternatives. If Figgis wanted to modernize with something newer, what would they buy? A single-engine turboprop like a Caravan or a Kodiak is a fine airplane, but it's a single. For an operation that flies over cold open water and into unforgiving terrain, a lot of operators want two engines and want them badly. A newer twin turboprop like a Twin Otter is a superb machine, and it's the natural big brother to the Islander. But it's a bigger, heavier, more expensive airplane than the mission may call for. The Islander sits in a very specific slot. Twin engine safety margin, modest size, short and rough field capability, simple piston maintenance you can do at the edge of the world without a factory nearby. That last point is the quiet genius of the design. Simplicity. An Islander is an airplane you can keep flying with a good mechanic, a stock of parts, and a hangar. That's not nothing when your operating base is 1,000 miles from anywhere. Which brings me back to the point I flagged earlier. The design is 60 years old and it's still the right answer. In aviation, we have a habit of assuming newer is always better. Glass cockpits, composite airframes, fly-by-wire. And a lot of the time, newer is better. But every so often you run into a mission where the old shape is the correct shape, and no amount of modern engineering has improved on the fundamental idea. The Islander is one of those. So is the Twin Otter, so frankly is the Cessna 172 in the training roll. Good design ages slowly. Now, I want to be careful here and flag this next part as my read on it, not as reported fact. My sense is that reshoring this production to the UK is as much about resilience as it is about national pride. When your supply chain runs through a facility in another country, you're exposed to everything that can go wrong between here and there. Politics, logistics, currency, bringing primary assembly home gives Britain Norman more control over its own timeline. That's opinion, but it's opinion grounded in what we've all watched happen to supply chains across the whole industry these last few years. If you've tried to buy a part for your airplane lately, you know exactly what I mean. Let me bring this down to the ramp, because this is a news show for pilots. And there are a few takeaways worth carrying with you. First, if you fly a legacy type, and a lot of you do, this is a good reminder that an old type certificate is not a dead type certificate. Manufacturers can and do bring old designs back into production, which means parts support and factory backing for airplanes like this can actually improve, not just decline. Keep an eye on the type clubs and the manufacturer bulletins for the airplanes you fly. Support can come back. Second, watch what Figgis and operators like them choose, because bush and island operators are the honest test of an airplane. They don't buy on ramp appeal, they buy on reliability, on parts availability, on the number that matters most, which is dispatch rate. When an operator in a brutal environment renews its fleet with the same type it's flown for decades. That's a real-world endorsement worth more than any brochure. Third, and this is the one I'd underline. Respect the ground testing phase, not just for factories, for you. When you pull an airplane out of a long annual or out of extended storage or after any major maintenance, treat that first start and that first flight with the same seriousness a factory treats a rollout. Do the thorough run-up. Check the systems methodically. Give yourself extra margin. The professionals build in a testing gap between finished and flying for a reason, and the principle scales all the way down to your airplane in your hangar. So that's the Islander. A boxy little British twin, 60 years young, rolling out of a home country factory for the first time in most of our lifetimes, bound for some of the hardest flying on Earth, it is not a glamorous airplane. It never was. But it is a deeply competent one, and competent ages better than glamorous every single time. This story comes to us from the reporting at Aveweb, who covered the rollout and the delivery plan. If you want to dig into the details, that's where to go. You can find us anytime at radiohangar.com. The Islander has been flying since 1965, and it looks like it'll be flying for a good while yet. There's a lesson in that for all of us. Build it right, keep it simple, and it'll keep bringing you home. I'm Tower. That's your ATIS for today. Fly safe out there.